This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. Legendary investor Ray Dalio's new book, How Countries Go Broke, The Big Cycle, explains the mechanics behind big debt crises. Larry Summers says Dalio's brilliant iconoclastic approach is an invaluable resource, and Hank Paulson says it provides a solution to what is the biggest and most certain threat to our prosperity. Read it to understand the greatest economic issue of our time. Available now wherever books are sold.
Living with schizophrenia isn't easy, especially when you're not getting relief from some of your symptoms. It can be hard when you're still dealing with symptoms, like hearing voices or seeing things that aren't there. And negative symptoms, like feeling unmotivated or avoiding social situations. If this sounds familiar, it might be time to talk to your healthcare provider and explore a different kind of schizophrenia treatment. Discover your possibilities at treatingscz.com.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Hope you had a great weekend. We're back in action now. I didn't really take any time off because Trump doesn't take any time off. You can't really even take a deep breath. Bottom of the hour, Matt Continenti is going to be with us. He's the director of domestic policy studies at AEI and columnist. And founding editor of the Washington Free Beacon. We'll talk to him in a matter of moments. Also, we're following another story about a Border Patrol in plain clothes who was shot in the face by an illegal immigrant with a huge rap sheet. It just is emblematic of so much that is wrong with our immigration system and been ignored by so many Democrats. So before we get to Lawrence Jones, who's in studio, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's not the Democratic Party that I knew or that I was a part of for many, many years. And this socialist trend that's going on is something that I couldn't stomach anymore, and it's why I left.
Yep, that is Joe Manchin, a mayor's race that matters. Four-horse race, it heats up, and the stakes have never been higher for the city. And in my mind, the country, and especially the Democratic Party, who has decided to do a political autopsy, yep, on their 24 election. Makes sense, right? Except for they don't want to look at Biden or Kamala Harris. I'm not kidding.
Number two.
There are so many elected officials that have gone ahead and tried and called for the open doxing of agents, saying that ICE agents and officers and their families shouldn't have any rest, shouldn't have any peace. That's just totally unacceptable.
Yep, war against illegals in America. It's becoming clear the aliens have an ally, every Democrat in Washington, and it's making Trump's job harder and putting ICE agents' lives in danger. I'll talk to Lawrence about that.
Number one.
So the Republicans in the House and Senate have to work together seamlessly as one team, and we have obviously a very strong commander-in-chief. It's a great team. We're getting a lot done for America, and we're just getting started.
Speaker Johnson talking about the first 6 months of Donald Trump, too. CBS polls show they're low in terms of approval. I see big wins from MAHA to Iran to the big, beautiful, now law, and weighing in. So, Lawrence, I was said to you, watch Face the Nation, because I watched it.
Yeah.
Because if you watch Face the Nation, look at the first 6 months, and they just did a poll. The president's got overall 42% approval rating. On immigration with deportations, 49% approval. Dangerous criminals getting him out. They were convinced that most of the people were throwing out were dangerous. In June, 53%. Now they think that we're only getting rid of, only 44% of the country thinks we're getting rid of dangerous people. So 42%. Approve of the way he's using detention facilities, and 64% say boarding crisis. They have a boarding crisis going down to the border crisis is going down to 28. There's no change there. So people agree with the border, but they don't agree with the what ICE is doing.
Well, they don't agree with how the media is portraying the story. They're not showing when the criminals are getting arrested. They're making it seem like the CBP, as well as Border Patrol and ICE, are just racially profiling people, and that's not really the story there. When you look at that, I had Border Patrol on this morning, the guy that represents the union. Do you know 51% of the Border Patrol, they're Hispanic? And they're the ones that are now doing, it's not just ICE doing these operations now. It's Border Patrol that's doing the operations with them because the border is secure. Let's take this new person, Brian Miguel Francisco Mora Nunez. He was led in the country under Biden, attempted murder charges, two assault charges, armed robbery, two arrests for domestic violence, and he entered the country illegally, Brian.
So he does that, and he walks up on a guy who happens to be Border Patrol off duty and shoots him twice. And he's going to be okay, it looks like, press conference in the middle of this show at some point. But overall, at the 6 months, I have a totally different view of how the president's doing. I mean, dramatically different.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think by 65 to 70% approval, considering if you look at the Wall Street Journal today, America's got this swag. The economy's got its swagger.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at Iran's got a nuclear program.
Right.
I believe it's obliterated.
Right.
Okay. Right now, they're closer to getting hostages out of Iran. How's that going, foreign policy-wise? On trade deals, yeah, it was a little unsettling in April. But if you look at the economy and the tariff revenue, huge positives there. NATO is stronger than it's ever been. There's no more crisis. We don't have a crisis in recruiting. The numbers are exceeding the goals. There's so many positive things going on there.
Brian, you have to be a fair broker. And that's the problem with the media. They don't like him, but they're also being intellectually dishonest. Let's take you, for example. You were a little worried about the Russia-Ukraine war, where the administration was going to be on it. You had confidence in the president, but you didn't know how it was going to go. So you waited it out. You said, okay, I'm going to give the president a chance here to show where he stands. And lo and behold, the president has evolved when it comes to Putin. He tried to give him a shot for peace. He rejected that. You see the weapons now, packages. You see the sanctions that are getting ready to happen. That's called being an honest broker, but you can't deny reality. You got Karen Bass that won't even admit or acknowledge that the border is now secure. She was asked over the weekend on the Sunday show, okay, can you at least say, you know, the border looks a little different. Can you give them credit on anything? She says, no, I don't know.
Right, but by the way, the follow-up question,
but
Lawrence, the follow-up question from Martha Raddatz should have been, they were averaging 85,000 a month.
Right.
This guy's got zero. How could you not?
Right.
You know that same disconcerting, like, how can you not? You
right.
know, that whole sanctimony. She didn't have any follow-up with her. Karen Bass is an embarrassment. She's trying desperately to avoid being in Ghana when the whole city burned. Nothing's been done.
That's right.
Still, here's Karen Bass, cut 12.
Well, let me just tell you. We have a Los Angeles Police Department that has to deal with crime in this city every single day. And they're not masked. They stay here. The masked men parachute in, stay here for a while, and leave. And so you enter a profession like policing, like law enforcement? I'm sorry, I don't think you have a right to have a mask and snatch people off the street.
I mean, it's first of all, can we just please stop this narrative that ICE is just snatching people off the street? They're acting like there's a kidnapping going on. These are people that have final deportation orders or they have a criminal warrant. Just like any other American citizen that has committed a crime, they get arrested. It's not snatching and kidnapping people off the street. And by the way, if you don't like the mask, then maybe she should talk to her own vice unit, because they try to protect themselves against the drug cartels and the drug dealers on the street, because they will kill them.
Right, but we don't have a problem with protesters
right.
wearing masks, right? Cut 15.
If you ask me, is there anything that they have done good in terms of immigration? I don't know. I don't think so. I think that the viewpoint has been punitive, has been, let's make it as miserable as possible so that these people don't come.
What else are we supposed to do? I mean, you want us to give them cell phones? You want us to give them debit cards? You want to give them hotel rooms to stay? Because we did that. And we got over 10 million people in the country. It's been the worst border disaster of our time. So, yes, the administration did put some pressure on. Yes, they are sending a message that it's not going to be welcoming for you to come in if you do it the wrong way.
Yeah, I want you to. So Tad Lyons is listening to the whole get your mask off deal and the lack of credit and kidnapping. Here's what he said. He's the acting ICE director. Cut 13.
There are so many elected officials that have gone ahead and tried and called for the open doxing of agents, saying that ICE agents and officers and their families shouldn't have any rest, shouldn't have any peace, that if we're disrupting illegal aliens' families, then ours should be. That's just totally unacceptable. And it's, you know, unconscionable, the fact that they would want to put a federal law enforcement officer or special agent in harm's way or their family. what the mayor said is totally wrong. The best part about that is she says we parachute in and then go away. No, we're going to stay in Los Angeles until we take care of the criminal aliens that are affecting her community that she's blatantly ignoring while she's focused on the brave men and women of ICE just trying to do their job.
We need legislation on this. You know, there's laws in the books that if a judge makes a decision and you decide that you're going to protest in front of a judge's house, you can't do that. It's illegal. You can be arrested for that. Why don't we give law enforcement the same protection when the judge is signing the order for them to go pick up people? It just seems a little counterproductive to have the judge assign final deportation orders and warrants for their arrest. And it's not okay to protest the judge for signing these, but it's okay to protest these people at their houses for a limited paycheck.
Yeah. Now they're offering $50,000 to any ICE agents who wants to come back on the job. They're also going to have more money for ICE agents. Hopefully they know that they should feel that they're appreciated in these cities. They're never going to be accepted because for some reason they think they get reelected because they stick up for illegal aliens. I think Mayor Adams realized that doesn't work for anybody. Mayor Bass is so insulated and in that left wing approach to things on the left coast. She might never get it. And I know the guy in Chicago is just
Johnson, Brandon Johnson.
Has nothing. When we come back, what about the big fight in court with Harvard and Trump? It comes to fruition today. We'll preview it with Lawrence in a moment. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Creating this piece of manufactured intelligence that claims that Russia had helped Donald Trump get elected contradicted every other assessment that had been made previously. The effect of what President Obama and his senior national security team did was subvert the will of the American people, undermining our democratic republic, and enacting what would be essentially a years-long coup against President Trump.
That was Tulsi Gabbard, a series of interviews, Lawrence Jones, over the weekend, saying that they've uncovered documents showing that in September, everybody knew the Russians were not significantly influencing any election. They certainly weren't hacking machines, and they changed December 14th. They totally changed their status and said, let's start working on this Russian connection and linking it directly to Trump.
Brian, I think the key takeaway is these aren't her words. These are their words. All the intelligence agencies, including the FBI as well, have contact or doing daily meetings. And it says in the file, when they were actually labeling the meetings, that yes, Russia was trying to interfere with the election, but they just weren't good at it. They didn't know how to deal with each county running their own election. And so they almost pretty much dismissed
it. Facebook ads.
Right. It's like, okay, you're planting disinformation on Facebook. Okay, a lot of foreign actors do that. Okay, we kind of dismiss it. But after the election, you see the intelligence agencies ratchet it up. And they're not putting those meetings on there publicly, telling us what they're discussing. And then that's when they plant this seed saying Russia is responsible for Donald Trump's victory.
So they just ignored it on the Sunday shows, except for Face the Nation.
Asked
one question to Congressman Jim Himes. Cut 41.
What you saw from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was not just a lie, but a very dangerous lie. Because when you start throwing around language like sedition and treason, somebody's going to get hurt. Now, you pointed out that the Senate committee, then led by Marco Rubio, a Republican and now Secretary of State, found unanimously that Russia meddled in the election to try to assist Donald Trump. John Durham, special counsel appointed by Donald Trump, investigated this, found that the Senate report was correct.
So, your thoughts.
Well, he's making two different points. Yes, we all agree that they tried to meddle. They weren't successful, number two. And number two, it had no impact on the election. So that is Tulsi's entire point. Is no one's disagreeing that they tried. They just weren't good at it. And to suggest that the president colluded with them, he was not a willing participant in that.
Yeah, so he called her a liar. Basically, he says he's disingenuous. He says, you watch, there's not going to be any indictments from this. Well, it's not up to her to get the indictments. No. Now it's up to the FBI and Pam Bondi to go out and do that. Here's more. Cut 42.
Now, what Tulsi is doing, it's a little sleight of hand, but it's worth focusing on. She is saying that the Intelligence Committee early on said that the Russians could not use cyber tools to mess with the voting infrastructure, the machines that tally our votes. And that was true then, and it is true now. Though the Russians tried to break into a couple of states' election technical infrastructure, they didn't do it. But it is well known and well established that the Russians hacked into the DNC and undertook any number of other influence operations, including buying reams of Facebook ads to discredit Hillary Clinton. That is not in contention.
It's $2 million of Facebook ads, and it didn't do anything.
Yeah, but anybody can buy Facebook ads. Yeah. Anybody can say whatever they want
on the public square. Other people doing it.
The question is, and he knows this is why he's trying to split hairs, is did it have any impact? And he concedes to that point that they tried to mess with local elections, but they didn't have the tools to do so.
So then they go ahead, and Don Jr., who met with this Russian, and why was Michael Flynn in Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, taking a call from an ambassador to Russia? Why did Senator Sessions, who became Attorney General Sessions, why did he meet with the ambassador? And Sessions folded like a cheap suit and said, okay, you're right, I should put a special counsel in charge.
Noise. No one was ever charged with collusion with Russia. They got them on other things like lying to the feds and other things like that, tax charges and all that. But no one was ever charged because they didn't have the goods. They didn't have any real evidence to suggest there was willing participants in the collusion.
So here's what Chris Wecker said, the former assistant FBI director, cut 38.
Here's the thing. They completely flipped counterintelligence on its head. They got information that the Trump campaign was being targeted and that Hillary Clinton and her campaign were trying to smear Trump with the Russia hoax, what turned out to be the Russia hoax. And what you would normally do in the field of counterintelligence would be to go to the American citizen, in this case, a presidential candidate, and give them a defensive briefing and say, look, you're being targeted. The Russians are trying to impact the election in some way. Instead, the FBI under Jim Comey and McCabe opened up an investigation on the Trump campaign itself. And I think what we're going to see, and what Tulsi Gabbard has pointed out, is that Barack Obama was the puppeteer here.
That was an interesting point by Swecker that I hadn't really thought about. Normally, whenever a foreign actor is targeting an American, there would be a briefing. You'll try to protect the foreign actor. You ask them, can the federal government put some security precautions? Kind of like the assassination threats on the president as well as Pompeo. The federal government steps in and say, how can we protect you? The same thing for a cyber attack or anything like that. The federal government didn't do that. They didn't try to protect the Trump campaign. They didn't give them a briefing. They didn't try to put different security measures in place. That's asinine that they didn't do that. That's a point that needs to be highlighted. And they knew this. They knew that they were trying to attack them. And instead of trying to protect them, they said they colluded with them.
Lastly, just when it comes to Harvard and the Trump administration today, Trump revoked authorization to enroll international students. He suspended $2.2 billion worth of grants and contracts,
huge.
$60 million, threatened to remove accreditation. So now Harvard's suing to get all their money back. How do you think this goes? It's going to be a hearing today, and a judge is going to make a decision.
They're going to have to buckle. All the other universities are willing to negotiate. Now, we had heard, Brian, behind the scenes that Harvard was trying to negotiate. But now it seems like they don't want to negotiate. And it's interesting enough that their attorneys are making. They don't want a trial because they don't want all the stuff that the administration has uncovered, the anti-Semitism on campus, to be shown in open court.
Right. It's going to be a judge's decision, but it's an Obama judge.
That's what they're advocating for.
But it's just, if you're a federal government, you have to pay, you have to give out grants and loans?
No way. This is going to go to the Supreme Court, and you're going to see the authority back to the executive.
Unbelievable. Lawrence Jones, thanks so much.
Thanks, bro.
It's now okay for you to go party with all your friend for the morning show now. I kept you an extra half hour.
I'm going to do jiu-jitsu.
All right, that's good, Tim. All right, back in a moment. Matt Continente, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's not the Democratic Party that I knew or that I was a part of for many, many years. The Democratic Party I grew up in was responsible. They were compassionate. They were fiscally responsible. They understood that they had to do their part but help those who needed help. But get up and do something for yourself. There's none of that right now that we can see of. And this socialist trend that's going on is something that I couldn't stomach anymore. And it's why I left. And if the National Democratic Party doesn't get back to more of a center or center left, there won't be a party that they're going to look at, recognize at all.
I know. And that is exactly like I expected Joe Manchin to feel. And when he joined me on Sunday night on One Nation, that's what he said. Matt Continente joins us now, Director of Domestic Policy at AEI. And he's also a columnist, a commentary and founding editor of the Washington Free Beacon. Matt, your thoughts about the Democratic Party, who oddly is doing an autopsy on the 24 election, but pledged not to look at Biden or Harris.
Yeah. Hi, Brian. That's an incredible autopsy. It's like the criminal investigation unit decides, you know, we're not going to look for the cause of the harm to the body.
Yes.
When we do the medical examination. I think the Democratic Party is in the process of self-destruction. When you look at the fact that it is at record lows in popularity.
19%, right?
19%, decade lows. When you look at the fact that its fundraising and its polling in the congressional generic ballot is not where it needs to be ahead of the midterm election, and then when you look at the fact that it is clearly turning left at the very moment it should be moving toward the center and integrating the lessons of the 2024 campaign, you have a party, I think, that has a death wish, and no individual better encapsulates that than Zoran Mamdani, the Democratic Socialist that the New York Democratic Party has nominated to be the next mayor of New York.
And you got a mayor from Sudan, a mayoral candidate in Sudan, who is, looks like he's got the nomination in Minneapolis with almost no experience, but he's an avowed socialist, Muslim socialist, who I don't even think likes the country.
So we're going to take him over the incumbent, who, of course, got himself in a twist with the left during the George Floyd riots of 2020. And let's not forget, of course, the lawlessness that we see in these anti-ICE protests taking place throughout the country and most notoriously in Los Angeles. And then these very disturbing reports as well that we hear from Democratic congressmen saying that when they go meet their constituents, the Democratic base is telling these elected representatives to become even more outraged and even potentially violent. This is a party that is not connecting with middle America, which does not want any of the gender nonsense, which does want a secure border, and which wants, to, above all, to have a full employment economy with rising incomes.
I just want people to hear, and I don't want people to get caught up listening, why are we talking so much about New York? Because this guy is actually, in a recent betting poll, is the fourth leading candidate to get the nomination. As crazy as that sounds, and he's slightly behind, just barely behind Cory Booker. Listen to what Zoran Mamdani believes as early as 2020, cut 23.
I think that, frankly, I mean, what purpose do they serve?
Right.
I think we have to ask ourselves that, which is that, you know, I think a lot of people who defend.
You just pause one second. He's saying what purpose? He was asked, should we have prisons? Keep going.
It makes them feel. They're not defending the reality of it and the practices that are part and parcel of it. Because, you know, if you actually break it down and ask people how many people go in, come out of the prison system better than they went into the prison system, right? How much harm is actually being prevented versus created? I think these, when you ask these kinds of questions, people don't always have clear answers.
Yes, we do. your option to be a rehab. I want criminals in prison, but he's not for that. He said domestic disputes should be addressed by social workers, and it should be equivalent to a jaywalking ticket. Your thoughts?
He's also raised opposition to the principle of private property, one of the foundations of Western civilization. No, I think Mamdani does deserve a lot of attention, not because he will be the president of the United States one day, but because he's very closely connected to someone who might win the Democratic nomination for president in 2028, and that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. When you look at where the energy is in the Democratic Party, it's not with the kind of the safe liberal establishment any longer. It is with these younger socialists who are anti-American, they're anti-Israel, they're anti-capitalist, and they want to uproot the very foundations of our society. This is not only bad for the America and for Western civilization, Brian, it's bad for the Democratic Party, because when the Democratic Party is associated with this ideology, it loses at the polls.
I would think so. We'll have to see. Now, you wrote about Elon Musk in a third party. So, you know, we remember Ross Perot in 92, and remember he got 20% of the vote, but no electoral votes. Remember he kept that party around for a while. John Anderson back in the 80s, I think, was around. But third party just doesn't seem to be able to get traction. Is this going to be different?
Well, I think it has the possibility to play the more traditional role of the third party. If Elon Musk does go ahead with the America Party, and he's been talking about it a lot, but we have yet to see anything on the ground in terms of organizing to get ballot access, for example. But if he does go through with it, third parties traditionally play two roles in American politics. The first is profit. You can see in third parties where one of the two major parties might go. And with the Reform Party, started by Ross Perot in 1995, 96, you saw kind of the roots of MAGA and the Trump phenomenon that would later become so dominant in the Republican Party. The other role that third parties play, Brian, is spoiler. And that's what really worries a lot of people and worries the Trump administration, too, because sometimes you run these third party candidates, they're able to win enough of the vote to deny the major party that agrees more often than not with them. But I still kind of am looking to see whether Elon Musk is going to put some muscle on the bone of his proposed third party.
I do, too. And I would say this. If Donald Trump in 2016 says, I'm going to run for president, but it's going to be the MAGA party, he wouldn't have won.
Right.
See, he went in and changed the Republican Party in his own way. Well, he didn't go in and start his own party because it wouldn't have worked. And then if you ever get in, you got absolutely nowhere to pass anything because nobody's on your side.
Yeah. And in fact, not only would Trump have lost had he run as an independent, but so would the Republican nominee, whoever that might have been. And so Trump was smart. He knew that if you want to have real change in American politics, you have to operate between one of our two major parties. And that's exactly what's happened over the past 10 years with Donald Trump and the Republicans.
So what is your take? Before I play a little of Tulsi Gabbard, the DNI, as director of national intelligence, she has acquired and going to release more information, about 100 pages of memos that shows she says that Barack Obama was orchestrating the insurance that Donald Trump would not have a successful or any presidency to have the whole Russia hoax. Before I play Tulsi Gabbard and what she said over the last three interviews, what are your thoughts about what we know now that we didn't know a week ago?
Well, I think we know some more of the timeline about these meetings, about the initial finding from the intelligence community and then the White House meeting with Obama that resulted in a separate finding, which laid the foundation for the Russia collusion hoax. And so if DNI Gabbard has more to release, I think we'll have a further documentary record. It might provide some public pressure to get Obama on the record, but I bet you he's going to fight that for as long as he can.
Well, yeah, cut 34.
President Obama and his team, he directed a manufactured piece of intelligence that detailed not if, but how Russia tried to influence the outcome of the United States election that President Trump won in November of 2016. This document was then used as the foundation for everything that came next. It was essentially a years-long coup that was launched against President Trump before he even had the opportunity to take his oath of office and be sworn in as President of the United States.
So that's the beginning, and I could go through this again. There's been so many books written on it, but it's like, Matt, we have two parallel lines. You and I will follow this and try to get to the bottom of this, and then you have the other side totally ignores this story. It, Jeffrey Epstein begins and ends every broadcast now.
Yeah.
So do you think this would be one time where the trains have to cross?
I think they're going to have to cross eventually. But, you know, I think, Brian, what is really fascinating me is this DOJ investigation into Comey and John Brennan. So the former FBI director and the former CIA director, which is based on a CIA finding. So separate from Tulsi Gabbard, this is John Ratcliffe and the CIA finding that Comey and Brennan had something to do with the dirty intelligence that led to the Russia hoax. So that's where I would keep my eye on. And I think what DNI Gabbard is doing is supplying more evidence that something was rotten in that Obama White House during the transition in 2016. But I'll just say this. The media is so good at covering up stories. And let's not forget that even now, when you have some media spokespeople acknowledging Joe Biden's cognitive decline, it's still not being covered and they're still protecting their reputations. So I'd expect them to try to do the same thing here with the Russia scandal.
And with the Biden thing, they're all taking the fifth and it's going to be hard to get traction. See if Ron Klain is different. I've heard from a Democratic official that Ron Klain ran that White House. I go, what about after he left? He goes, he was still running the White House. So, someone's going to tell the real story.
We know Biden wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have Jake Tapper who comes out and writes this book and goes, I was so stunned to find out he wasn't running things. And he went out and took a lot of heat from both sides for doing it. But just go to show you that this is a score for money, in my view. You watch him yesterday go 6 months into the Trump administration. We're going to take a look at that. But let's begin with Jeffrey Epstein. They do the whole half hour on Jeffrey Epstein. Nobody cared about Jeffrey Epstein until they found out it could divide the MAGA world. Now it's an obsession on Jeffrey Epstein. Let me ask you, Matt. What do you think is the top 10 story that matters most to America? Is Jeffrey Epstein even in the top 10?
No, not at all. I'll tell you the number one, Brian. It's hamburger prices. And I know that the Trump administration is paying a lot of attention because even though we've made great gains in inflation overall and with egg prices and with gasoline prices, those hamburger prices are still pretty high. And so I'd expect the Agricultural Department and Secretary Rollins to come out this week with some policies addressing that. That's the number one story, not Epstein.
Absolutely. And the costs and, you know, so we'll see what's going to happen. Lastly, on Ukraine, the President of the United States is really fed up with Vladimir Putin. I love this, what they're doing on drones, use their drone technology in exchange for bigger Patriots, maybe more offensive weapons. So in the big picture, the president has made a 180. And he says, you know, Zelensky and I might have problems, but clearly Putin is the issue. And you got my support. And now he's got a fortified NATO, a motivated NATO, with two more quality countries, which Joe Biden deserves credit for. Evidently, he picked up the phone. Go ahead, give him his credit. Finland, Sweden, got him in. So now you have a fortified NATO, and you have a president that says, okay, I see who the bad guy is. Your thoughts about him evolving on this?
Well, I think it was always about the sequencing. First, you needed to make sure that the Trump administration and Zelensky of Ukraine were on the same page. And at first, I think Zelensky was a little bit wavering, but then he got on Trump's side, and the two have a very good relationship, it seems to me. Then you had to have NATO all on the same page. And that NATO summit in June was extremely important, not just for the 5% commitment, but also because Trump came out of that saying, look, NATO's trying to defend itself against Russia. He really understood. Now we have the turn. Now we have the foreign military sales, the NATO purchases of our weapons that will then be given to Ukraine. So we get money for these. It's not a foreign aid bill. We have the threat of the punishing tariffs at the end of the 50-day period. And we also have the sanctions bill in the Senate, which would be very tough with secondary sanctions on countries that still purchase Russian oil. The one other thing I'd look at, Brian, is the frozen assets. We have some frozen Russian assets.
$5 billion.
Europe has a lot more. If they could use some of those to supply Ukraine with weapons, that would provide the pressure on Russia finally to come to the negotiating table.
Here's Lindsey Graham, Cut 48.
He's not going to stop until somebody makes him stop. So Trump has been tough on Iran, who is incredibly dangerous, but they're in a weakened state. And Putin, your turn is coming. You know, Donald Trump is the Scottie Scheffler of American politics and foreign diplomacy, and he's about to put a whooping on your ass. What's going to happen here is that Trump is going to impose tariffs on people that buy Russian oil. China, India, and Brazil, those three countries buy about 80% of cheap Russian oil. That's what keeps Putin's war machine going. So President Trump's going to put 100% tariff on all those countries, punishing them for helping Putin.
Your thoughts? Do you think it'll come to that?
Well, I think that there will be tariffs imposed. And just one other thing that's kind of been left out of this conversation. You know, the One Big Beautiful Bill, Brian, had a lot of money for defense. I think $150 billion plus that helps our Defense Department rearm and get back up to fighting strength. That's something we need, sure, to compete with China, but it will also send a message to the Kremlin to show that America is not leaving the world stage, despite what many people may think or may have heard.
Spread out those ship contracts, get the drones flowing, use R&D, and start moving up, and the recruiting is going strong. It's one of the president's unsung accomplishments. Matthew Condon, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, when we come back, your time to talk, 1-866-408-7669.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Obviously, the focus on the name has happened over the years. And sure. Is the Redskins coming back as a part of this deal?
So the Commander's name actually has taken on an amazing kind of element in our building. So the people, that certain types of players that are, you know, tough, that love football, are delegated Commanders. And Jaden, for example, is a Commander, and they're ranked. And, you know, the business staff has gotten into it. And obviously, we're in a military city here. There's more military personnel than anywhere else. So we're kind of moving forward the Commander's name, excited about that, and not looking back.
Really? Oh, if you want a new stadium, maybe you're going to have to look back. That is the new owner of the Redskins. We know that they caved during the whole George Floyd riots, and then the Redskins had all the scandals by the horrific way that they ran their front office with this guy Snyder, and they caved, and they just had a name change with the Washington Football Club, and then they were the Commanders. So President Trump says, no, it should not be the Commanders. You should be the Redskins. We don't stop with the political correctness. I just got an email from Jeannie, who's listening to the show, said about Redskins. If progressives object to the name Redskins because of their skin color, why do they refer to us as white supremacists? Now, I interview this other guy named Jack Buck, who is a former Redskin who's got Cherokee heritage. And he said, and so does the Redskins logo. And by the way, the family of the face of the person who's the Redskin, they want the name. They want the face back. The family loves it. And this guy, he was part of the original Indian tribes when the original goes back to the Mayflower. He says, of course, we love playing for the Redskins. And in the Indian community, they called themselves that. It's in their writings. So Trump is 100% right on that. Just like in my town, Massapequa, they spend millions of dollars in order to fight back to keep the name Chiefs. It's principle. It's also showing the kids you stand for something. And they're with other American Indian organizations, too. Not all of them. The Shinnecocks on Long Island, they're not for this. They want to take Long Island back, I guess.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills. But it turns out, that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
In Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, so glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, come to you from Midtown Manhattan, around the country, around the world, who might be the home to a communist mayor, maybe the first one in America. But in London, they're laughing, saying, look at what's happened to us since we did that. At the bottom of the hour, Congressman Buddy Carter is going to be with us. And we have Chris Wecker, former FBI assistant director. He'll be going to be joining us in a matter of moments. Just have to tell you that Kristi Noem, DHS secretary, is now meeting with the press after finding out that multiple illegal immigrant, multiple offender from burglary to domestic abuse to now attempted murder, shooting a off-duty Border Patrol agent in New York City twice, once in the face, and then finding out that he should have been arrested 6-7 different times. Been in this country illegally since 2023, and he's now having a press conference. So before we get to Chris, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's not the Democratic Party that I knew or that I was a part of for many, many years. And this socialist trend that's going on is something that I couldn't stomach anymore, and it's why I left.
A mayor's race that matters. New York's four-horse race heats up, and the stakes have never been higher for the city and for the country and for the Democratic Party, who has decided to do a political autopsy on their 24 election disaster, but they said they will not analyze Kamala or Clueless Joe, which makes me think it's worthless.
Number two.
There are so many elected officials that have gone ahead and tried and called for the open doxing of agents, saying that ICE agents and officers and their families shouldn't have any rest, shouldn't have any peace. That's just totally unacceptable.
First 6 months, grade Trump 2. CBS poll shows low polls. I think there should be big wins from the MAHA movement to Iran to the big, beautiful law. I want you guys to all weigh in.
Number one.
So the Republicans in the House and Senate have to work together seamlessly as one team, and we have obviously a very strong commander-in-chief. It's a great team. We're getting a lot done for America, and we're just getting started.
Yep, and that is true. We'll see where we go in the next 6 months. And you know, it's been a successful 6 months when they decided to talk about Jeffrey Epstein instead. Joining us now is Chris Wecker of the after the revelation that Tulsi Gabbard has found some memos that put together and shows a plot and a plan. She claims in handing it over to the DOJ to just make up the whole Russia investigation in order to derail Donald Trump and delegitimize his election. Chris has been looking at a lot of this paperwork and joins us now. Chris, your thoughts about Tulsi's revelations?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on. This whole thing is unraveling now. I mean, there are many of us that recognized this early on in 2016 when
you did. Obama, I know.
Yeah, the Obama administration essentially began to spy on the Trump campaign. But the genesis of it was that the CIA under John Brennan had uncovered a plot by Hillary Clinton to smear the Trump campaign, and that the Russians intercepted her plans. They somehow got word of her plans, and Brennan became concerned about this, briefed the FBI. Instead of opening up a case on the Clinton campaign for trying to smear Trump with falsehoods or on the Russians for trying to influence the election in any way, they went ahead and opened up a case on the Trump campaign and campaign operatives and got FISAs based on the dossier, which we now know has been 100% discredited. So instead of giving a defensive briefing to Donald Trump and his campaign, which would have been done in 99.9% of the circumstances, because this is counterintelligence, that's you're countering foreign efforts to influence elections or gather intelligence on us, they went ahead and opened on the campaign. Unprecedented, unconscionable.
Here's what James Comey said in 2016 about this in congressional testimony, cut 37.
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians
interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts.
Do you think he even believed that?
Yeah, I don't know what he believes. I think he believes in himself more than anything else, in his own ego and his own sanctimonious, hubris. And, I think he felt like he could exercise judgment for the American population as to who was fit to be president and who wasn't. And clearly he and his family thought that Donald Trump was not fit to be president. And he went along with opening up this investigation. The real movers, that were here were the deputy director McCabe and the deputy assistant director Strzok, and then his paramour Page, Lisa Page. They were all pushing this. They had enough experience to know that that's not how you handle a counterintelligence investigation. They took the opportunity to gin up the dossier and some other spurious information to open up an unprecedented investigation of a presidential campaign.
Here's what the DNI found. Cut 34.
President Obama and his team, he directed a manufactured piece of intelligence that detailed not if, but how Russia tried to influence the outcome of the United States election that President Trump won in November of 2016. This document was then used as the foundation for everything that came next. It was essentially a years-long coup that was launched against President Trump before he even had the opportunity to take his oath of office and be sworn in as President of the United States.
So she said she found these memos and he's putting it together and more are coming out. So let's fast forward. John Durham seemed to me very honorable guy. He didn't find this. And Robert Mueller had this great reputation, and that's in tatters right now. But why did they not find this?
Yeah, some of the
Robert
information
Horowitz
was in
too.
Some was in the Durham report. Some was in the Inspector General report. Some of the information came out of the congressional investigation. And now it's all coming together in one place. I believe they found it. Before, the previous administration found it, they weren't willing to do anything about it because it was their, it was a Democratic administration under Joe Biden. He was probably very much aware of it himself. So now we have this information that's classified, can't use it in a criminal indictment unless you declassify it. That's about to happen. So now the question is, the statute of limitations is 5 years. That's probably run. You can extend that time out by charging a conspiracy to commit perjury or falsify government documents, and you go by the last act that happened, which would have been beyond 2016. It might fall within the statute of limitations. That's all a very legal, it's all legalese. What it comes down to is I think it'll be a tough prosecution to try to prove that this is perjury or conspiracy to commit perjury, but it sure will shine some sunlight on what really actually happened here.
So I want you to hear the pushback. Nobody really wants to bring this up on the other side, just like they never wanted to bring up the laptop after the election was over. So Jim Himes was asked on Face the Nation about this. Listen to what he said. Cut 41.
What you saw from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was not just a lie, but a very dangerous lie. Because when you start throwing around language like sedition and treason, somebody's going to get hurt. Now, you pointed out that the Senate committee, then led by Marco Rubio, a Republican and now Secretary of State, found unanimously that Russia meddled in the election to try to assist Donald Trump. John Durham, special counsel appointed by Donald Trump, investigated this, found that the Senate report was correct.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, they would certainly know about that, and lying about presidential candidates and the like. Look, I don't think Russia or Putin wanted President Trump in office. He would not have been good for them with sanctions and that sort of thing. In fact, the dossier were mainly Russian sources, and there's a good case to be made there that the deliberate Russian disinformation that was negative towards Trump. We know it's all lies. If you ever read the dossier, it's absolute junk. But, as a former prosecutor, I think they'll have a hard time with their mm-hmm. with an actual prosecution. But I don't think that'll stop Pam Bondi and the FBI from conducting an investigation to get the facts out. More so to get the facts out than to get a successful prosecution.
And I know you're going to run, but I will say this. There's no doubt about it. What the Senate was given was their conclusion. But they never had all this information. So if you give someone a limited bit of information, of course the conclusion's not going to be as thorough as what was just released. But I'm very curious to see how defensive people are going to get. I want to see this thing hashed out in front of our eyes. I don't want to see it in separate silos. Chris Wecker, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Take care. Oh, listen, your turn to talk 1-866-4, or you want to write 1-866-408-7669, or you can write me, BrianKilmeade.com. And keep in mind, too, August 23rd, I know it seems like a long time away, we're going to be on stage, this huge venue over in Dallas, Texas. Tell one, tell everybody. It's a fantastic show. It's going to be streaming on Fox Nation 2, History, Liberty, and Laughs. If you are going to celebrate year 250 of America's founding, this is the perfect time to do it. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Rated T for teen.
Each year, thousands of adults lose their shred. It's an epidemic simply known as shred loss, but it doesn't have to be this way. Because rekindling your shred is as easy as playing the new Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4. With new parks, cross-platform multiplayer, and sick new game modes, we can put an end to shred loss everywhere. Get the new Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 and show the world that the shred's not dead. Get Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 available now.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In New York City, this 21-year-old male has prior arrests for assault and violating an order of protection. At the time of this shooting, he had an active bench warrant from the Bronx. He was wanted for a robbery from last December and a stabbing from January. A robbery from last December and a stabbing in January. In less than 1 year, he has inflicted violence in our city. And once he is charged for last night's crimes, we will be able to add attempted murder to his rap sheet.
So that is how bad this guy was. He should have been arrested four separate times and wasn't. And I'll tell you, and people don't know, Mayor Adams, when he first came, and Mayor Adams is not a perfect person, never perfect mayor. Obviously, everybody knows that. But there's no way he deserved some of the prosecution, the indictments that came his way, or the scrutiny from his own party. But one of the first things he did when he became mayor, he says, I got to go up to Albany and I'm Democrat, and I'm just going to explain to them this whole cash bail thing's not working. They laughed at him. They didn't want anything to do with him. And they basically said, come back here when you realize you're just a mayor, you're not a governor, you're not going to tell us what to do. These are Democrats to Democrats to Democrats. Same way the Democratic Party kind of blew him off, and Joe Biden ended up taking the FBI ended up taking his phone. So I have no interest in the gritty details of what goes on. But if you knew there was something happening here that made absolutely no sense. But now with the illegal immigrants, in the beginning, he made a mistake. He said, I'm going to greet these people. America's a melting pot. And he greets all the guys at the bus station when they get off from Texas. Then he realizes, I got tens of thousands of people here. I have nowhere to put them. I got to reinvigorate and reopen up the Roosevelt Hotel. And then multiple facilities. Then we have more than 100,000 here at some point, illegal immigrants. And it was totally out of control. When he complained about the criminal element, what was going on inside these hotels, with the food being chucked out and abused, and he complained, they basically said, you're persona non grata, you're making things worse, how dare you speak up? And they punished him like a mobster, like the mob would punish somebody who spoke up against the family. Well, Joe Biden, he forgot to exist. Now, he brings up and he vents his frustration because this guy should have been arrested and kept in jail, but these judges keep letting him out. And I saw this, $600 million. Has been set aside for illegal immigrant accommodations, whether it's housing, whether it's schooling, or whether it's legal aid. Horrible. Here's police commissioner Jessica Tisch on what happened this weekend when the border agent was shot twice. Cut 10.
The officer was sitting on the rocks along the waterside. Two males rode up to him on a scooter, and the passenger got off and approached him from behind. One of the perpetrators produced a firearm, at which point the officer realized that he was being robbed and drew his service weapon in defense. The perp fired first, and an exchange of gunfire followed. The officer was struck in the forearm and in the face.
That's what happens. But we have Jerry Nadler telling Sean Duffy crime's not a problem in New York City. Then you know what this guy was doing before? It looks like he was stealing somebody else's phone in just a crime spree. That's what happens when you feel as you're never going to get caught. Here's more from Jessica Tisch, Cut 11.
At this time, we have no indication that the officer was targeted for his employment.
And not, he wasn't wearing a uniform. I don't think there's any way people would, this guy would think that, oh, okay, this guy looks like a Border Patrol agent. So it just goes to show you how dangerous the job is and how dangerous the city can be. So that's what we're looking at right now. But let's look at the president's first 6 months. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'll tell you what the CBS poll. The CBS poll does not paint a bright picture. In 6 months, they say Trump's got a 42% approval rating. That stuns me. I thought it should be, in this divided, polarized world, like 49%. Immigration on deportations, he had 58% approval in June. Now it's down to 49% because a lot of these conflicts with ICE agents, the way they're being portrayed by 50% of the country and 100 lawmakers, makes it look like they're the problem. Is the president arresting dangerous criminals? In June, they said 53% said yes. Now they say 44%. Are they deporting people who are not dangerous criminals? In June, they said 47% yes. Now they say 56%. 42% approve of the way we're using our detention facilities. That's low. 64% say the border crisis has gone down and been better. Only 28% say no change. So they give him credit for the border crisis fixing it. Immigration approval overall, the GOP approves 91%. Independents, 41%. Democrats, 14%. 64% of Hispanics say more searches among them than any other nationality. Hate to tell you, but a lot of legal immigration comes from the southern border, which is a lot of Central and South America. That's the way it profiles. Actually, if I'm President Trump, I'm not worried about this at all. Number one, they always take more Democrats. Number two, you're doing things right now to lay the groundwork for success at the midterms. And I think most successful thing he can do is get prices down. And by doing that, that's why he is so desperate to get rates down. Why? So people begin to buy and sell houses again. You can't, if you're a middle-class American and you have a 3% mortgage and you're ready to move on to a bigger house or add something onto your house, you're not going to do it at 7%. You're not going to do it. Unless you just have to move for a job, and a lot of times it would supplement that. That would be a different situation. But if you just want to move up in life, it doesn't make financial sense to do it. So everything's stuck. It's stuck, and we do have extremely high rates. I'm not saying I'm qualified to be the Fed chair, but the president is extremely frustrated about this. Now let's think about what he's done over the first 6 months. Congress passed the big, beautiful bill, right? Congress passed Trump's historic rescissions package. No one's ever taken, only one time in history have we ever taken money out of the budget. $9 billion and more to come. Wholesale prices of eggs are down 53%. The U.S. economy has now added 671,000 jobs since January of 2025 when he got the job, with numbers beating expectation 4 months in a row. Native-born Americans have accounted for all job gains, with native-born employment increasing 2 million, while foreign-born employment has increased 543,000. Look, it's not perfect. There are some prices going up. You heard Matt Continente says when it comes to beef prices, they're going up. So they could drive those prices down. On retail goods, they are down 0.6%. That's when this president could hit turbo speed. And then he could be doing other big things, even before the midterm elections.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Let me just tell you that the mask men are not from Los Angeles.
and so how their families could be retaliated against. And then what is that to say to local law enforcement, the Los Angeles Police Department, none of whom are ever masked, who always identify themselves and even hand someone a business card? So that makes absolutely no sense at all.
She is such a moron. It's crazy that she actually thinks she made a good point. Does she understand that these people are being doxxed, their families are being harassed? That is why they're covering their face. They understand law enforcement better than she'll ever understand law enforcement. She spent most of her time visiting Cuba and Ghana. So she's saying that they do not have to cover their face, as if you know what their job is. So this is her way of distracting because of the miserable failure she's been with homelessness, with crime, and most of the city burned to the ground while she was on a recreational trip to Ghana, even though she knew the city was about to go on fire. This is time to bring in Congressman Buddy Carter of Georgia. Congressman, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Always good to be with you, man.
So, Congressman, how do you explain it? Does she not get why they have to wear face coverings? Is she pretending not to get it, or does she really not get it?
Yeah, it's hard to judge. I mean, you know, I don't know whether she separates reality from her own thoughts or what, but she obviously does not understand. She obviously doesn't get it.
You got about 18 states now that want to make have a state mandate that prevents ICE from covering their face. Do you believe that's the focus, not the insurrectionists and the rioters who inexplicably cover their face, but you have these guys that are looking to do that? Doesn't that have to come from the federal government?
I would think it would come from the federal government. I don't know why she feels like that she should be mandating that. If it were to come about, then yes, it should evolve from the federal government.
So I guess where we go from here, so far, when the president on immigration, 64% approve of his border, it's the most successful border enforcement in the world, in the world, and certainly in the history of our country. I've never seen anything like it. But when it comes to deportations and the approach, he's been underwater. 47% now approve of his deportation policy. They say that 42% approve of the ICE arrests. What do you think has to change for the perception of the public? Let's say these polls are right.
Well, what needs to change is people need to understand. First of all, I applaud President Trump because this is not easy. This is a difficult task, a heavy lift, if you will. And he is approaching it head on. And that's what, you know, I have a lot of admiration for the president, but particularly in the way that he approaches difficult issues like this. And yes, deportation is a difficult issue. We all agree, and he ran on the premise, on the platform, that he was going to get rid of, he was going to secure that border, and that he was going to deport illegal immigrants. And now he's doing it. Now all of a sudden people are upset about it. Well, first of all, he's got to get rid of the criminal illegals. And that's the top priority. And that's what he's trying to do. Again, he's prioritizing making sure he gets rid of the criminal illegals first. Now he's going after the others. And, you know, you had me at they're here illegally. I mean, you haven't got to say anything more. If you're here illegally, you need to go back from whence you came and then come in here legally. We invite you in here. You know, we accept more immigrants in this country than any other country in the world. And we want you to come. Yeah, come on. If you can be a productive member of our society, we'd like for you to be here. But you need to do it the right way.
I guess we're going to see what's going to happen and how people feel about it. The ICE is going to get their numbers bolstered. They got to get better facilities. They got to crack down on the NGOs. So they're getting them from all angles. And I just hope that they maybe get more ICE agents on. They're getting $50,000 if they have recently retired and want to come back, because I guess there's a real need for these agents. Let's talk about the economy right now and where the country stands. Howard Lutnick, as Commerce Secretary, is talking about the trade deals that got to get done in the next 2 weeks. He's confident something's going to happen with the EU. Cut four.
You know, I was on the phone with the European trade negotiators this morning, about a half hour ago. So there's plenty of room. Look, the president and the European Union, these are the two biggest trading partners in the world talking to each other. We'll get a deal done. I am confident we'll get a deal done. Okay? And it will be great for America because the president has the back of America.
So they want the EU, and you guys seem to want EU and China more than, and Japan more than anything else. The EU evidently got derailed somewhere between Friday and Saturday. What could you tell us about that? Anything?
Well, I'm not privy to the inside information about what happened over the weekend, but I will tell you this. This is another example of President Trump attacking difficult issues. Let's face it, tariffs. And he told us. He told us from the get-go, look, there's going to be some short-term pain. And our office has been inundated with companies. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Well, guys, hang in there. This is short-term pain for long-term gain. And what the president's doing here is trying to negotiate long-term deals. This is a situation with the trade imbalance that has existed for years and that we've just kicked the can down the road. And as you ignore a situation like this, it only festers and only gets worse. And thank goodness the president's finally addressing it. He's using it as a negotiating tool to negotiate trade deals. He wants to negotiate a trade deal with the EU, with China. And those are things that we want him to do and that he needs to. And I might remind you that he made campaign promises that he would do. And campaign promises made, campaign promises kept.
So just looking now at some of the things that he has accomplished in his first 6 months, it looks like the border crossings have plummeted. The big, beautiful bill right now is unpopular, but so is the tax bill. It got very popular. Tariffs have generated $100 billion. The Supreme Court limits nationwide injunctions. The Israeli-American hostages got freed, a lot of them, hopefully maybe 10 more this week. NATO has never been stronger, and now I think that last NATO summit has put them all in a good spot. 6 months of MAHA improvements, taking steps to phase off synthetic food dyes, investigating impact of ultra-processing food, launched Operation Stork Speed to enhance infant formula. So they're making progress there, and then you got brands like Welch's, General Mills, Heinz, Skittles, Tyson, PepsiCo, Popeyes, McCormick, Steak and Shake, all taking out individual dyes. Even water is getting fluoride out in some states. That'll affect everybody. There shouldn't be any politics in anything they've done.
There should not be, and that's why kudos to Secretary Kennedy and HHS for the work that he's doing. And I support Robert Kennedy. I think he's doing a good job, and I think he's addressing issues that need to be addressed. One thing you left out that I think is extremely important, I'm talking about the first 6 months of this presidency, and that is what we approved last week, and those are the rescissions. Taking back money that should have never been allocated, appropriated in the first place, taking it back, that to me was significant, $9 billion. And in programs that we should have never been supporting anyway, the waste, fraud, and abuse that has come about and been identified by DOGE, by the Department of Government Efficiency, that is what we're doing. We're making government more efficient. And exactly, when you get a bloated bureaucracy like we've got, you're naturally going to have a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. And that's why we've got to go through it. And yes, it's taking time, and $9 billion may not sound like a lot compared to the trillions we have in debt, but how do you eat an elephant? A bite at a time. We've got to do this a bite at a time, and I assure you, we will get there.
There's going to be more a little bit after that, but people are upset at PBS and other places, but you guys are getting stuff done. This is the headline of the Wall Street Journal today. Top story, economy is regaining its swagger. The stock market's up, retail sales are up, consumer confidence is on the upswing. Bank card spending is up 7%. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citi are talking about a rise in profits. J.P. Morgan earnings report was better than anyone thought. United says people are traveling ahead of the last summer's pace. Inflation did tick up a little, and certain prices are up. So I think the economic focus is going to be front and center this summer, right?
Absolutely. And thank goodness for the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that we passed and got it done in the self-imposed timeline that we wanted it done in. In my home state of Georgia, if this had not been passed, then 88% of Georgians would have seen a tax increase of over $1,500. That equates to about 7 weeks worth of groceries. Yet our senior senator, John Ossoff, voted against it. And he even voted. He voted to allow illegals on Medicaid. Medicaid, a safety net program intended for the most vulnerable in our society, and he wants illegals to be on it? I tell you, Ossoff has got to go. This is just ridiculous.
But who are you going to run against? Who's going to run against him?
Well, I am a candidate for the Senate, and we are working our ass off to get rid of Ossoff.
Do you have Governor Kemp's – have you talked to Governor Kemp?
I've talked to Governor Kemp, and I continue to be in conversation with him and with the president. We feel like we're very close with the president, and we're working hard.
So I guess that, you know, if Brian Kemp was available, I guess it would have cleared the field, but it would have made him the favorite. He does not want to do it, obviously. Think probably he's going to be primed to run for president next cycle, personally. But he's been very successful. Do you think that Georgia's changed since 2020?
I don't think it's changed to the extent that the media says it has. 2020 was an anomaly. That's how we ended up with the two Democratic senators in a red state. I still submit to you that Georgia is a red state. And yes, you are right. Governor Kemp has done an outstanding job, and a long line of Republican leadership with Sonny Perdue, with Nathan Deal, now Brian Kemp. And I think Brian Kemp would make a great presidential candidate. And certainly we hope he runs in the state of Georgia. But I will tell you, Georgia is still a red state. Georgians voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump for president. They deserve a senator who is going to support Donald Trump and his America First policies in the Senate.
So when's the primary?
The primary will be in May. Qualifying will be in March, and the primary will be in May. We're real happy with where we're at. We had a very successful second quarter. We raised over $3.2 million, and we've already spent $2.5 million and getting our name ID up, and it worked. We're up 10 points, so we feel real good about where we're at. Yeah, you're right. Brian Kemp would have cleared the field, but he and his family made the decision not to run, and now we're stepping up, and we're going to be the one to get it done.
All right. Thanks so much. Good luck. Congressman Buddy Carter is going to put his hat in the ring to be the Republican nominee and oust John Ossoff, who considered the, one of the most vulnerable up for reelection. Thanks so much, Congressman. Best of luck.
Thank you, Brian. Always good to talk to you.
Same here. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back. I'm going to talk about the Democrats' autopsy that they're doing without examining the dead body. I'm not kidding. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Being a politician means listening, not just to your supporters, but your critics, too. And some of these critics, especially on a certain website, have been giving me consistent advice. For example, at SamWhite087, Zoran, go back to Uganda, where you come from and belong. At Teflon Gone, loser, go back to Africa. There are thousands like this from across the country. I hear you. And I agree. I'm going back to Uganda. I'm headed there in a personal capacity to celebrate Rama and I's marriage with our family and friends. But I do want to apologize to the haters, because I will be coming back.
Well, the one thing he does have is a good social media presence, and he also does some fake New York Post headlines where he says, okay, now that I'm leaving, this is what the New York Post is probably going to write about me. And the one thing that people could say is Democrats are desperate to get his social media game. They feel as though he has some ideas, which is true. Reportedly, he got all young people, got him excited about so on social media, didn't get him excited on TV commercials. Evidently, Andrew Cuomo put most of his money into cable television. So not that I'm against cable television, but it's not the most progressive thing. But it's got to scare Democrats. When the biggest crowds go to AOC and Bernie Sanders, and when the most into a Democratic primary gets a turnout like this, a record turnout, highest in maybe 16 years, and it goes to a guy who says, yeah, I'm a socialist, don't really like billionaires, don't like capitalism. Here's what Joe Manchin told me Sunday night at 10 o'clock, cut 24.
It's not the Democratic Party that I knew or that I was a part of for many, many years. The Democratic Party I grew up in was responsible. They were compassionate. They were fiscally responsible. They understood that they had to do their part but help those who needed help. But get up and do something for yourself. There's none of that right now that we can see of. And this socialist trend that's going on is something that I couldn't stomach anymore, and it's why I left. And if the National Democratic Party doesn't get back to more of a center or center left, there won't be a party that they're going to look at, recognize at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to fly in the Midwest. You might say, well, look, AOC is so popular. All right, she's got so much money. You're going to tell me that any of her principles are going to fly? I mean, she's from Westchester, but she acts like she's from the streets of the Bronx, and she never is in her district. Nobody has prospered except her. Evidently, she has raised more money than any other Democrat in the country. So Eric Adams is one of the first in his own party. He's going to be taking on his former party. He's going to be taking on Mondami. So there are going to be other moderates taking on other extreme candidates. Here's what Eric Adams said he's going to be doing. He told me this on One Nation last night at 10 o'clock, cut 25.
I think the entire nation is looking at what's happening here. We have to get it right. And we're running more than only running against the candidate. We're running against a philosophy.
What do you mean? DSA,
their philosophy is not the values that I believe in and far too many New Yorkers don't believe in.
Yeah, I wouldn't think, but 500, 400,000 did agree. More than he got last time, but he also pointed out that he was trailing big time to Andrew Yang. This is going to be a little bit tougher because this is an establishment candidate. Andrew Yang, I believe, was running as a Democrat. Cut 26.
First, let's look at the percentage. The numerical minority voted in the primary. 2.5 million Democrats did not vote, a million independents, and several hundred thousand Republicans did not vote. And when we talk about affordability issue, look at what we have done. And that's why it's important to get my story out. We put $30 billion back into the pockets of working class people. No income tax for low-income New Yorkers, paying off medical debt, reducing a fare on our subway system, we reduce fare metro cards, paying college tuition for our foster care children. Those are real results that we're showing.
That's his campaign. He says, I haven't really started. I haven't had anything to do. Now I'm going to start doing it. Right now, according to the Real Clear average, he's fourth with 14% of the vote, trailing by over 20. So is he the face of the party? Adam Smith joined Shannon Bream on Sunday. And here's a little of what he said. Cut 31.
Well, look, the mayor of New York has never, never, ever been the leader of the Democratic Party. No, Mondami isn't speaking for our party anymore than I'm speaking for our party. It's a big tent. It's a big coalition. Yes, Fox News wants to focus on that. But let's focus on the fact that Trump is now underwater on immigration. Why? Because in addition to that $3.5 trillion deficit, add to the debt, mainly because of tax cuts, he's now spending $170 billion more on ICE. He says he has secured the border. He's spending all this money now on going around and terrorizing communities.
You got to terrorizing or cracking down on illegal criminals? Now that he says he secured the border, Adam Smith, go to the border. And for a guy that likes to come on Fox News, why does he always have something negative to say about Fox News?
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade Show back in action after what I hope is a great weekend on your behalf. I know nothing slows down. The Trump, we're on that Trump train. So there's always news happening. John Heibusch is going to be with us, former director of Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation Institute, author of The Shroud Conspiracy and The Second Coming. Also, at the bottom of the hour, Congressman Dan Musser will be with us. He's still considering running to be the next governor of Pennsylvania, which is becoming redder by the day. Before we get to John, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's not the Democratic Party that I knew or that I was a part of for many, many years. And this socialist trend that's going on is something that I couldn't stomach anymore, and it's why I left.
A race that matters. New York's four-horse race heats up, and the stakes have never been higher from this city, from the country, for the Democratic Party, who has decided to do a political autopsy on their 24 election disaster without analyzing Kamala or Clueless Joe, which makes me think it's going to be worthless.
Number two.
There are so many elected officials that have gone ahead and tried and called for the open doxing of agents, saying that ICE agents and officers and their families shouldn't have any rest, shouldn't have any peace. That's just totally unacceptable.
War against illegals in America. It's become clear the aliens have an ally. Every Democrat in Washington. And it's making Trump's job harder, putting ICE agents' lives in danger. Who is the public siding with? We'll discuss.
Number one.
So the Republicans in the House and Senate have to work together seamlessly as one team. And we have obviously a very strong commander in chief. It's a great team. We're getting a lot done for America, and we're just getting started.
That is the Speaker of the House talking about his team, and he's talking about the first 6 months. Grade Trump, too. CBS poll has low polls. I see big wins from the MAHA to Iran to the big, beautiful law. I want you guys to weigh in, though, and so I do want John Heibusch to weigh in. John, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you, Brian.
So, John, your thoughts about the first 6 months?
Fantastic. I mean, historically unprecedented, I think, Brian. I've worked for years and years all about the legacy of Ronald Reagan, and he was one remarkable president. But I have to tell you, President Trump is something else. It's just been fantastic to watch one victory after another. I'd say the main thing that defines him, Brian, in my mind, is courage. That guy is the most courageous politician I think that we've had in America in many, many years.
I mean, he really changed the party. People were talking about, well, we need a third party in this country. What he did is he went in and changed the party within the party structure. And people couldn't believe it was happening. They would never accept it. Remember, Jeb Bush says he will not be the nominee. Barack Obama says he will never be a president. And they were both wrong.
You bet. go back to Reagan for a second. You know, people talk about him being a transformational president. And he really was. And I thought that was a really high bar, but I have to tell you, the first 6 months of this year, it's beyond a doubt that Donald Trump will go down in history as being a truly transformational president. And that is a mean feat, really.
So if you're going to do 6 months in any other period, judging his first 186 months, you see the border shut down. We have never seen anything like it. And you lived it, but President Reagan said, I'm going to do immigration reform. And he had a pledge that they're going to seal the border. He gave amnesty. They never sealed the border. He says, I'll never be duped like that again. Trump sealed the border himself when they said it was up. I didn't think it was possible. I think Tom Homan even surprised himself. I mean, between the military and the Coast Guard, they literally sealed the border. So now it gives you the opportunity, without trusting anybody, to do some type of immigration reform. Many elements of it aren't even controversial.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, and pointing again, I'm sorry, but I keep going back to Reagan, but, you know, he, Ed Meese, the guys that surrounded the president at the time said, you know, that's the biggest mistake we made in all 8 years. They should have never cut a deal like that. They thought they were going to get border security and, you know, get restrictions on employers for hiring illegals. But the Democrat Congress never came through, and they were had, you know. And so I'm just so glad to see that President Trump's not fallen into that same trap. And I think it's provided some history for us to look back on to say what we got to be very, very careful about not doing again. And that is believing that the other side is going to come through with some sort of program to really restrict it. I don't believe that's not in their interest. I don't think they're ever going to want to come to the table to negotiate something that will be acceptable for this country. So I think President Trump should stay right on the track he's presently on.
So when you talk about the illegal immigrants, and now we see ICE out there with the border seal, we're going out to pick up the worst of the worst and anybody with them along the way. But there's this huge pushback to vilify the ICE agents. You say that is part of a strategy to make sure that they get to stay and make us look like hard-hearted or the ICE agents look like terrorists.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, Ron, I wrote a piece on Substack about 2 or 3 months prior to this election, knowing that when President Trump got elected, this was going to be the prime issue. And I was trying to put up warning flags about how difficult this was going to get, not only from a cost standpoint, but certainly from a PR
optics,
and a,
yeah,
Yeah, and it was just going to be terrible. But I have to say, and this is a really tragic situation, Brian. But I wrote another piece recently, and I think the Democrats are really seeking here by demonizing our federal agents trying to clean up this immigration mess is they're looking for their next George Floyd moment. I really believe if you watch these crowds of people and how violent they're getting, they are trying to force Trump and his administration and these brave officers into making a tragic mistake. And they're looking for someone that can lose their life on their side, who they can build monuments to turn around the political narrative. It's a really, really dangerous situation. And I have to say, I'm really proud of everyone in the border security world right now working under President Trump for holding their fire, for being as mature as just taking it. It's starting to frustrate Americans, I think, that they're not able to really put these violent protesters in their place. But they've been so responsible, and I hope they keep that up, because I don't think we should give the victory to the other side by making a mistake ourselves.
I mean, just listen, I don't know how dumb Karen Bass is or how she's playing dumb or who she's playing to, but listen to her describe ICE agents. Cut 47. Oh, cut 17.
Let me just explain, because you have people who are literally walking down the street, sitting at bus stops, are individual vendors selling fruit on the street. These masked men pull up in unmarked cars and jump out of the cars with rifles and detain people. So for the average citizen, it looks like it's a violent kidnapping. So you should never have that. They don't identify themselves. And furthermore, to your previous guest, how on earth do they know that they're a threat when they're just chasing random people through parking lots, at Home Depots, going to car washes and rounding up people? It's difficult to get your car washed in Los Angeles now because most of the car washes, the employees won't come to work out of fear that a raid will take place.
So do you think ICE agents get up in the morning and they just chase Hispanics down the street?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's what they want to do for a living, you know. And I tell you, I saw an interview, because I live out here in L.A., and I've been in the middle of all this. Saw an interview just the other day with Karen Bass, and the interviewer said, you know, well, you've got about 1 million illegal immigrants that live right there in Los Angeles. And, you know, there's a problem here, isn't there? And she said, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, can you imagine if L.A. all of a sudden lost 1 million illegals? Well, the place would shut down. So this is a culmination of many, many years of sanctuary activity, and now they're getting what they pay for. I mean, the city literally would shut down if ICE could do its job completely, and that is indicative of the kind of terrible leadership that Governor Newsom, that Karen Bass have been leading the state into for many years. And it's a tragic situation out here in California, Brian. It really is, because there's a mass exodus of people, and they've just had enough. And immigration is just one part of the terrible equation that's been affecting their lives.
But yet Gavin Newsom feels he's done such a great job, he should be the next president. He says it's the Mecca. He thinks he's doing a fantastic job and better than California, a lot better better choice than Texas. He says, I'll take that comparison any day.
Yeah, well, if you thought Joe Biden was a lousy president, just wait for Gavin Newsom. Because he is not an executive. He is an actor. That's what he is.
I agree. I 100%
agree. He's just
an
actor. And everything about him and his life and his administration is about performance art. That's all it is. He could, you know, if the nation thought if he thought it took outlawing illegal immigration and cracking down on it, and that was the way for him to get elected, well, guess what? That's what he would be for. You know, he's just all about himself, and it's destroying the state in the process.
So, you know, what you said, I agree with. In 6 months, you could point to a myriad of things the president's already accomplished, including passing that massive legislation. No one's talking about the crypto bill that set up a criteria for cryptocurrency. It's going to be a revenue stream for this country. You talk about the international deals he's done and the energy, starting to revitalize energy in anticipation of the demands of AI. and from the DEI to taking on the colleges, it's amazing. But if you look at his overall approval rating, if you look at CBS, 42% approval rating. On immigration, he's dropped to 49. On, you know, different on deportation, his policy went from 56 to 47. If you're working with the Trump team, how much do you shape any future policy on how your perception is from a CBS poll? And I imagine others reflect the same thing.
I do what President Trump is good at, and that is ignore the polls. Just keep doing what's right for this nation and keep that heading. And, you know, listen, when Ronald Reagan was president, at the end of his first 2 years, he had not so good approval ratings. And it's going to take a little while for the for all the things that Trump has done on the economic front to really kick in. It can't happen overnight. But we're going to see an explosion of economic activity in the United States like we probably have never seen before because of the work that Trump has done. But it's not going to happen in August. You know, it's going to happen probably by next August in a really fundamental way. And I think his approval ratings will skyrocket between now and then, and it'll be a wonderful thing to see.
John, did you have a period being that there was Trump is so different? Was there a period where you were saying to yourself, this guy's not presidential material, he's a Republican, but I can't get behind this? Was there in the beginning, because he's so different in approach maybe than Ronald Reagan and the George H.W. Bush and George W.?
Yeah. In fact, Brian, you know, when I ran the Reagan Library, you know, as you know, we have big, big presidential primary debates there. I got to meet President Trump in the 2016 run-up. And, you know, his style was so dramatically different than Reagan. I mean, you couldn't find two personalities and how they handle politics more differently than those two. And I had to tell you, I was skeptical. I was, of course, in a million years, never Trumper. I'm for our side winning. But I did wonder, is he really going to be able to be a great executive? But man, I'll tell you, I just changed my mind within a few weeks of him being in office in 2017. I just really admire the guy's courage. And I'll have to also say, and this is not a criticism in any way, but oftentimes it felt to me when I was running the Reagan that what Trump would do every morning is reach under his bed and pull out the Reagan playbook and take page after page from it from the standpoint of policy. And if you look at their policies, they match really well. And I think Trump has just found a way to modernize the Reagan message in the modern day and also to have a backbone of steel to keep pressing forward. And I just admire him so much for that.
Can you imagine if he didn't have that fake Russia investigation for 2 years that was costing his family, we will find out, $400 million and wiped out his staff and, you know, from Manafort in solitary confinement. Now we know it was a total hoax, just like the laptop. Can you imagine we didn't have that?
Oh, Brian, that's why I say courage, because I don't think any other personality in the United States could have, in that role as president, could have survived this. I mean, his skin is made of steel. And where does that come from? Because at the end of the day, I think what he's all about is doing what's right for America. That's it. You know, that's all he's trying to do. And it's been the metal that has protected him. And I just hope it remains in place because, he's just doing terrific things for this country, and I can't wait to see more.
Yeah, don't worry about the polls early. I think it's a good reminder, real quick, with Reagan, when he first started doing his supply side things, you know, then he loses his Stockman, and then they say, you know, I'm not buying any of this, and people must have really been questioning whether this was going to work or not.
Yeah, in fact, Brian, I was working on Capitol Hill at the time. And there was, when he was passing his tax relief and a number of these really critical supply side bills, it was new to the country. And the Democrats were very powerful back then. And the White House had to constantly remind House Republicans, stay the course, stay the course. That was the term, stay the course. And on the House side, in the Republicans in the minority, what was whispered around was, yeah, we'll stay the curse, because they were all worried about losing their jobs. And guess what? 26 House Republicans did lose their jobs by after the first 2 years in that midterm election. It was a very tough go, but they stayed the course eventually, and that's how Reagan did so well.
And I think that these guys understand that, too, and they're going to try to keep the majorities in both houses. Let's see if it happens. John, it's always great to talk to you. We'll keep reading all your stuff on Substack. John Heibusch, I appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts.
So that was James Comey in 2017 saying that the Russians were involved in the election. And we all thought that Robert Mueller was going to find this big thing. And Donald Trump, since he would not say he hates Vladimir Putin and say Russia's a terrible country, I'm going to start fresh, being friends with people just because we don't agree is not bad. And they said that shows that he's in collusion with Russia. But they were the first colluding with Russia. And now we're finding out more and more through memos it was a coordinated effort to make it seem like Trump was colluding with Russia in order to take him down, at the very least, trip him up. And it cost a lot. And on the subplot to all this, it's dangerous for international relations. You have an enemy that was told they were doing things they weren't doing. They do enough bad things, but they say, we didn't do this. Where Trump is actually going, I think I believe the Russian leader more than I believe my own intelligence apparatus. Well, it turns out, if he did that, he was right. Because Vladimir Putin did the Facebook ads and things like that, but didn't collude with Trump to win an election.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're the highest tax state in the nation, the most onerous regulations. People are leaving the state because of these horrific economic policies. So what are Mamdani's solutions? He wants to shout on TikTok about affordability. But when you dig into it, it's a government takeover of grocery stores. It's freeze the rent, i.e. making it harder, not only for small businesses, but importantly, making it more difficult for the people of New York to achieve economic opportunity.
That is Elise Stefanik, who I believe is primed to run for governor. I think she'd be really strong as a candidate. Man, is she confident and competent. But it's just amazing to me that Mamdani is very happy, does not care that he's a socialist. But the way they handle his controversial views is not let him talk to people. And they just want to let him run and do TikTok videos and funny things in order to, and then win an election. Try maybe, I bet you even avoids a debate. Of course he would avoid debate. He can't back up any of his statements. I would imagine he'd get destroyed. By the way, how did Cuomo debate this guy and the guy get through? Did anyone do any opposition research on him? Socialist hates billionaires, doesn't like capitalism, anti-Semitic, against ownership of property. So, by the way, the Democrats are doing, they have 19% approval rating right now. So whatever you think of Donald Trump, 19% approval rating. They're doing, preparing a deliberately, doing an autopsy of what went wrong in 2024. But they promised to leave out anything about Joe Biden's candidacy or the vice president. How do you do an autopsy on what went right and wrong and not analyze why you lost with the person you lost to? It's absolutely insane. I expected to argue that it was about advertising in the wrong places, about not having a crisper message, talking about what was able to get through. With me right now in studio is Pennsylvania Congressman Dan Muser. He's with the 9th District over there. He's Financial Services, Small Business, and Chairman of the Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigation. Hey, Congressman, great to see you.
Brian, great to see you.
So first off, I mean, how unbelievable it is that they're doing an autopsy on the Democratic side and they don't want to look at Biden or Harris. They say that, that's not the issue. How is that not the issue?
Well, they want to put it in the past, right? And they want to bury it, and they can't because that is the policies that they are all about. It's being shepherded through as we see. But what's even worse is you got some of their leaders are even further left than Harris or Biden.
I mean, I just played some from what's going on in New York City, and Adam Smith, colleague of yours, said, "Why do you guys at Fox want to keep pretending as if he's the standard bearer for the country? He's not the standard bearer for the party." How do you feel about it?
Well, look at their policies and look at their actions and look at their words. I mean, here they are telling us how ICE are the new Gestapo, many of their leaders. Here they are telling us that illegals that are here being arrested several times should be let go. Here they are going down to El Salvador having margaritas with someone who was a human trafficker, and we saw it on video. Here we are, every single Democrat voted for the largest tax increase in the history of America on 180 million taxpaying Americans, and they say, oh, we're giving tax breaks to the billionaires when there's less than 750 billionaires in the United States. Everything they say and do is pretty well phony, and frankly, I think they're just trying to fool the American people to the best of their ability.
So on Sunday night, I had Joe Manchin on, and I just asked him what happened to his party, and I was struck by the fact that he seems extremely upset by it, even though you would think that he'd be over it by now. This is what he said. He worries about with his party.
It's not the Democratic Party that I knew or that I was a part of for many, many years. The Democratic Party I grew up in was responsible. They were compassionate. They were fiscally responsible. They understood that they had to do their part but help those who needed help. But get up and do something for yourself. There's none of that right now that we can see of. And this socialist trend that's going on is something that I couldn't stomach anymore. And it's why I left. And if the National Democratic Party doesn't get back to more of a center or center left, there won't be a party that they're going to recognize at all.
The guy who's center left is Fetterman. In your state.
Well, perhaps.
On some things.
More so than anyone else. And I have to say he has the courage to bring some common sense to their ideology more often than most others. And Joe Manchin, what he's saying is completely accurate. I mean, certainly the party left them. How relatable is the Democrat Party to anyone other than an extremist at this point? I mean, they'll fight for boys playing in girls' sports. They're fighting for a tax increase. They're fighting for an expansion of our wildly bloated federal government. They're fighting for illegal immigrants. They're fighting for sanctuary cities and cashless bail. They're fighting against our economic growth, our national security, our public safety in our streets, and our fiscal overall stability. And by the way, I did see your show Sunday night. You don't stop. You does anybody work harder than you?
Well, it's not work. It's fun. This is great. But thank you for saying that. Yeah. So Trump, 6 months in, CBS did a poll. Only 42% approval rating. Even when it comes to immigration on the border, 64%. But when it comes to deportations, 49%. Now, if you are no cameras, no microphones, what do you take away from that if you're an analyst? If I hired you to be an analyst and say, Mr. President, this is what we learned from this, what do you say?
I'll say the American people relate to the policies of the Republican Party. I'd say they appreciate the actions. And I think even more so, people have come around, and many of us already did, to trust Republicans and particularly the Republican leader, and that being President Donald Trump. Because even if they don't like what he's doing, and let's face it, the results of what he's doing are outstanding, he says what he's going to do, and he does it. You build trust by being trustworthy. And that's a really important factor in all of this. You know, in the past,
does the 42% bother you?
Well, I mean, you know, that's higher than it was before, and he won in a mandate. We have growth to have, but there's also, you know, something out there known as Trump derangement syndrome, and you don't really get past that. And
although
the media,
he's got 89% support from Republicans,
right. But the media plays this out, right, with the Medicaid, the so-called Medicaid cuts, which aren't going to even exist. The work requirements don't even go into effect until 2029. If the state wants the waiver in red states, it may go into effect in 2028. The types of cuts that they're saying that are going to exist for SNAP simply are not going to happen. I mean, all the things that they're fear-mongering on will not come
were
to...
You were in Congress in 2017, right?
I entered in... 2018. I won in 18, I entered in 19.
So they say that when the tax bill came in, when it came through, it was also unpopular. But the longer it was able to get traction, the more traction it got, the more popular it got.
Absolutely. And look at the growth. Look at the income wages. I have many friends that said to me, you know what? I did the math. Now that we had a 20% 199A income reduction, I now can hire one more person. They don't look at this as sticking money.
Because you're from business.
Yeah, I do.
Tell everyone your background.
Well, you know, I spent over 20 years helping build a company in Pennsylvania, Pride Mobility Products, makes the greatest performance, highest performing mobility devices in the world for those with disabilities, high-end complex rehab, scooters and seat lift chairs and a couple other products. My brother continues to be the CEO of the company, but I've been largely separated from it outside of just being very proud of the company that employs a couple of thousand people almost at this point and makes these great products for people. So, you know, you learn a lot when you're in business. You learn that results are not the best thing. They're the only thing. And you also check your ego at the door, and you also don't make excuses for not getting things done. You know, that's kind of what a bureaucracy, government, public government is almost the opposite of that.
Don't you feel as that experience makes you a much better congressman?
Absolutely.
To know what a payroll is, to understand the stress of what people are going, yeah, and the startup stress too, yeah, the pressure it puts on the family, and how little things like payroll taxes and rents and interest rates matter.
You sweat it all. It's very difficult. And those who are successful just stay at it. And in some cases have a little bit of luck, but as well, they work at it. They watch the details. They watch their cash flow. And yeah, when you're hit with tax increases and new regulations, particularly small business, you know, I'm on the Small Business Committee as well as Financial Services, and which is where I should be. And the level of access to capital, for instance, still to this day under Trump, it's going to change, but it's very difficult for small businesses, and that's their lifeblood.
Where do you stand with the interest rates as you look around? I mean, you can't unstick this housing market at 7% when we were just at 3%. How do you tell somebody to go sell their house, they want to move up and get another bedroom, but it doesn't make any financial sense for you to do it? So everything seems stuck, yeah, unless you have cash.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And in fact, housing is a problem. Housing improves. It's there's no larger multiplier effect for our economy than housing. And where the state of affairs are, where inflation is, where unemployment rate is, the rates should come down. I mean, President Trump is absolutely right. The rates should come down. And there's some Fed governors that feel like it should come down, not just 25 basis points, but 50, 75, 100.
It almost seems political when he comes out and says, the tariff thing makes me uncertain. Well, the tariff is a policy. And now we've already had 4 months thinking about it. We're, yeah, almost, you know, it was in April.
Right.
So we're coming to a deadline, but so what is the problem?
Yeah.
Data tells you that it's not going to be, the market's already fully responded and surpassed where it was.
Right. You know, two things on that. Number one, you know, I have respect for Jerome Powell, but he's pushing the limit of showing bias. He didn't say anything about Joe Biden's heavy government spending, which was forcing inflation. He didn't say anything about the assault on domestic energy that sent gasoline prices to, you know, nearly $5 a gallon. And yet he's talking about these tariffs in a specific manner. runs completely contrary to what he used to tell us, that he had one mandate, that was that, and he didn't comment on policy. So and the other thing is, as you just stated, it hasn't caused inflation. Look, we bring in a certain level of imports. Even if you taxed 10% on the level of 10% of input of our GDP that is imports, worst case, that's going to have a minor effect on inflation. It's certainly not all products by any means. And people change their buying habits if something goes up, if that particular country plans on passing that along. So it's had little to absolutely no effect at this point. And I think the Fed chairman should recognize that.
$100 billion already been come from tariff revenue. Yeah. I hope maybe the EU deal comes through in the next few days. We'll have to see. Right. Stick around. We've got a few more minutes on the other side. And then you had – how many more appointments do you have in New York City?
Not many. I got to get on the train soon, head back to Washington. So.
The Acela or –
I believe the Acela.
All right,
hopefully
good.
It's the Acela.
Save yourself a half hour. Dan Musers with us now, the congressman from Pennsylvania. We'll find out about his plans next.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
It's not a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an issue with such significant impact that it should concern every American, because it has to do with the fabric and integrity of our democratic republic. That we had a situation here where in the months leading up to the 2016 election, the intelligence community assessed, and this is what the documents detail, the intelligence community assessed essentially Russia doesn't have the tools, the capability, or the intent to try to change the outcome of the U.S. presidential election. Donald Trump pulls off a historic victory against Hillary Clinton in November of 2016.
And she goes on, cut 34.
President Obama and his team, he directed a manufactured piece of intelligence that detailed not if, but how Russia tried to influence the outcome of the United States election.
So they came up with these, they're putting these memos together, they see a plan in place, and then we saw it. You weren't there yet, Congressman, but Dan Musers still with us. You weren't there yet, but then they start saying how he didn't really win the election combined with Vladimir Putin, and they investigated for 2 years.
Yeah.
But it looks as though they have the manifest here.
Yeah. It looks as though that Tulsi Gabbard, the new director of intelligence, found information that shows that the Obama administration, right from the top, including the CIA director, including Susan Rice, head of national security, that they all knew that there was not a strong effort from Russia trying to influence the election. And they propagated that theory anyway, sent that message. Just didn't propagate a theory, created and paid for, by the way, Hillary Clinton paid for. It was like $10 million, a Steele dossier, which had all kinds of false information in it, stating all these things that the president supposedly did. But even worse, James Comey had the audacity to walk into the Oval Office and put what he knew was a phony dossier on the president's desk, saying, "This is the information the Russians have on you, and we think you're."
And
a target.
John McCain thought it was real too. Here's what Jim Himes said when he heard about this, Congressman from Connecticut, cut 41.
Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard was not just a lie
but a very dangerous lie, because when you start throwing around language like sedition and treason, somebody's going to get hurt. Now, you pointed out that the Senate committee, then led by Marco Rubio, a Republican and now Secretary of State, found unanimously that Russia meddled in the election to try to assist Donald Trump. John Durham, special counsel appointed by Donald Trump, investigated this, found that the Senate report was correct.
The only person to be asked about this on another channel was Congressman Himes. Your reaction to him basically saying that Tulsi Gabbard's a liar.
Well, if she's got the information, and it sounds like she does, and we know the Steele dossier was completely phony, completely erroneous, made up for the purpose of discrediting and undermining the newly elected president. So I don't know where he would be going saying she lied. If there was some involvement on Russia, which is not that much of a surprise, if they did some social media, you know, they try to drive issues like climate change and things of that nature, and even some minor attacks, but there was no heavy of effort that was hold up. You know what? It's not even the, whether or not they had an effort. Did the president collude with them?
Yeah,
that was the accusation.
And that's what they hammered home for 2 years. And that's what they tried to prove. So the pushback is substantial. But I would love to see the trains meet instead of Democrats say this, Republicans say this. I would just love to. People just want to see the whistleblowers, whoever you got, come forward and show beyond a shadow of a doubt what happened. Because we also heard the same thing about the laptop. Very similar.
Very similar.
Yep.
And the laptop certainly proved to be true. And most of the positions we take proved to be true. And Tulsi sounded pretty intense as she was delivering this information.
Congressman Dan Musick, great to see you. And
you too,
we'll
Brian.
Hopefully get you out of Pennsylvania more often into New York.
Doesn't get any better than you, Brian. Thank you very much.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.